Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Reasoning with an Optimist podcast for the week of May 22nd, 2016. This is Jack Brissett-Mills. I'm so happy that I have a conversation today with Tony again. But first, the verses I wrote for Rudolf Steiner's Calendar of the Soul for his week 8. This one I wrote 2 years ago. Verse 8. The strength of my perceptions overfloods my thinking. The beauty and power of creation, the spring being of the world, wishes me to join its dance. And, as in a dream, I am swept off my feet. And this one I wrote last year for the same Rudolf Steiner verse. Verse 8a. I become giddy amidst the new growth around me. It seems the more I take in of beauty and life, the less I know of lists, of things to do. And so I gaze. Yeah, Tony is so full of life, she just bubbles. We talked an hour, and so this is a two-part conversation, and I'm very, very happy to share it with you. Thank you, Tony. Here you go.
Hi, Jack.
Hey, Tony. This is nice.
How are you?
You're going good. Thanks for wanting to talk again. That's really nice.
Oh, well, I'm just kind of surprised. I was like, he wants to record me?
I think you and I had one of the best conversations. It was really nice.
Oh, good. That's so good. Well, the thing is, man, I just jotted down 4 things we could talk about.
Good, good.
It's just like this never-ending observation, you know.
That's good.
I always joke and tell people I'm a social scientist when I'm telling them about these observations, because I feel like that might be a way out of it sounding like I'm just kind of making fun of everything.
Yep. Or anthropologist. You could just say, I'm an anthropologist. I observe the human race, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I really do a lot. And, you know, some of the things that I will say doesn't sound so nice, but it's what I saw. You know what I mean? you know, in description, you know, just in my description. So, yeah, but I'm always watching, and there's so many things right now, and I don't know. It's just been a lot.
You know, there's this big sculpture that this guy Rudolf Steiner made. It's like 15 feet tall, and it's very serious. There's a man in it, but there's a couple devils in it. There's one down below trying to grab the man from below, and there's one up above trying to pull him away from above. And what makes it funny, what makes it cool is, he included up on the top side, there's this smiling face, kind of a laughing face, like, this is all so funny. You know, the most serious thing about our lives is that it's really ridiculous. Everything about our time here is pretty silly if you look at it.
It is. It really is. And a lot of it, you know, I'd say, man, 80% of the time, the wheels everybody spins, it's just wasted, a lot of wasted energy.
Yeah, yeah.
On a lot of nonsense.
That's right. I think the immortal feeling of I got all kinds of time. I got the rest of the universe of time to waste on being jealous or angry or pissed off.
It's true.
So what's going on then? Give me your list. What's on the top?
Okay. Well, the first thing that popped out was I think I had, you know, kind of been a little, I just had a little confliction. I had liked immediately your post about Miss Obama, the little girl. Her name.
Oh yeah,
the
Flint girl.
Yes, yeah. And so that one was kind of on my list.
Let me explain that. Somebody said, "Why the hell didn't Obama go there a year ago? You know, why did he wait till now to go to Flint?" And you know, it's totally reasonable to ask that question.
Oh no, not the water. I was talking about his daughter going to school.
Okay. I was talking about the other day. I was talking about
Yeah.
A friend said, "Why didn't he go to Flint earlier?" And it's so complicated. It's just course, first of all, what could he possibly do? Second of all, if the Congress thinks he wants something, they're not going to give it to him. They're going to screw him over.
And well,
so,
yeah.
Anyway, so that was that. So you're talking about Malia going to Harvard in a year and all the racist comments.
And at first, yes, that was one topic of discussion. Okay. And then a second one was small spaces versus big ones, as have been, I kind of struggled with it a little bit moving into a bigger house what that's been like, and then what that's like in stores even. And then there's been mental illness stuff coming up that was in my other neighborhood, and it's in my neighborhood now, and just like thinking about, like, you know, do other people even take time to talk with them? You know, the people that you can visibly tell based on their behaviors if something's wrong, or just not well there.
Yeah.
And then the other thing was, I have this guy friend who, he has on several occasions here lately with people of all different backgrounds tried to intervene, like, and offer them up in a kind way, you know, suggestions on basically, following the rules.
Huh.
And so I was thinking, when do you intervene with people you don't know like that?
Oh,
and
when
should you and when shouldn't you? And, you know, just what's happened as a result of him doing that. So there's four topics.
Have you noticed the tendency in our country, the more money you have, even if it's just an average amount of money like I have, you try as much as you can to separate yourself from the random meeting of strangers.
Uh-huh.
You really try to have a car that won't break down, and then you go to a store where when you walk from the car to the store, you will not see anyone you're going to talk to, and then
that's right.
You go to the checkout where you won't have a person, you'll have a computer. And
yes.
That's like what we want, is we don't want anyone to meet us.
Interaction.
And so when you're more in a normal or poorer neighborhood or a regular country in the world, not our country, you see people randomly and you have to deal with them. And I think we're trying to avoid that as much as we can.
Yeah. And at night, that all of that leads right up to driving into your house, driving home and driving straight into the garage and not being outside on your porch or anything. So,
I never see, unless I'm pulling up at the light and there's a cardboard sign guy there, I never see anybody that I could talk to that has an illness, because they're hidden away from wherever I am.
I in my old neighborhood, I lived there 15 years and I walked it so much with my first dog. We walk that dog 3 times a day at first, and so for several years we did that, and then 2 times a day, and I grew to know. I tried to meet as many people as possible, because that was kind of a tie-in with the small space I lived in too. I felt comfortable and safer in a small house. And so I think the more I felt like the more people I knew, that if in case something were to happen, and this grew even more intense for me as I, when I got divorced and I was left to be what I felt was the one that was there to protect my daughter.
Mm-hmm.
Not that it had anything to do with these other people in the neighborhood, but it made me feel a little more secure to know everyone. And so that was how I came to know, a lady who I surmised, and, when talking with other neighbors, she was schizophrenic, and you could visibly see her good days and bad days, and it was a good practice for me just to kind of learn to help me learn how to read what kind of day it was and whether or not I should try to instigate anything, but I grew to learn it was just easier, I think, for her, if I just let her start any type of conversation if she wanted to, but I was always open to it.
Right.
Being a person 10, 20 years ago, in my 20s, I would be so sad. I was so disappointed by a few things because I had all these ideas of how people would be. I thought all Black people got along. I thought all women got along. I thought it was just crazy.
What a shock.
And
what
one
a shock.
Other,
yeah.
It was a shock for me as a young person.
Yeah.
And, I thought I could look up to all older people. I mean, there were just many things that I assumed. And one was that everybody would speak on the street. And And so, you know, that was just another practice that she wasn't going to say hi every day. She was not going to do it. And, you know, if she were having a bad day. And so it was just interesting, you know, and then sometimes her conversations would be completely out in left field. And I would just go with it. If she was, you know, I was walking with a boyfriend once and she was telling him, "You got to ask her about her dad. He's great." And she was talking like she knew him and he had passed. And, and so we were just like nodding and like, and laughing with her. And I wondered if in times of, you know, when she's having, say, a bad day, you know, I do wonder, does she remember that we have had some kindnesses exchanged? And that's just something that I wonder about a neighbor that I really know nothing about.
Yeah.
You know, except that I know they're not well in their mind. And currently in my neighborhood without, you know, really pinpointing who, I've already encountered someone else. And I talked with that person for an hour and a half last week.
Wonderful.
And when I told people that, I was telling somebody that, and they made like it was such a big deal that I did it. And I really didn't see what the big deal was. I really didn't. I mean, it's like I didn't have any place to be, and I, you know, I wasn't doing anything but sitting out on my porch. And that was, he had said he wanted to come and introduce himself, you know, anyway. And so I knew it was coming sometime. So it wasn't that big a deal. But the thing, I guess, that was a big deal was that, you know, this person really gave me a lot of background and a lot of intimate details of their life. And
yeah.
I don't mind hearing that. I did say to my daughter, I told her that, you know, that this person really told me a lot about their life. And I said, "I wonder why." And she said, "It's because you have a kind face, Mama."
Yeah.
And I thought,
of course, your voice, too, is very welcoming.
I thought, okay. You know, okay. But and it's also interesting in those times, you know, even, you know, well or not well mentally, whether you know, don't you wonder, like, how much should you tell people about yourself?
Yeah.
Like, you know, even your closest friends or even, you know, or somebody you just met, like,
you know, it's more,
they're telling you all that stuff. Like, do you, Jack, feel compelled to share something major when somebody shares with you like that?
I've done it a couple times with someone I've just met, but mostly it's, I see strangers all the time. I tune pianos for people.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm hello there. And maybe I know them. Maybe I saw them a year ago or 10 years ago. And so that is a chance to talk about anything, because I will leave. If someone was going to leave and you're not going to see them, you can talk about anything, really. And so I have made a psychological practice of talking to people about the deepest thing I can possibly talk about in the shortest period of time. because you leave and everyone's happy. And, if they told you something they really didn't want to tell you, they don't have to call you again. You know, they don't have to see you again.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's why we like psychologists, is that we don't have to see them in public. And so we don't tell our friends and acquaintances as many things as we might tell a stranger. I think we tell strangers a lot more stuff.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not the first time. You know, I was at the park once, and this lady from what I would call a pretty affluent neighborhood, you know, had walked down with her little one, and she had a couple other kids, and she just spilled it. She had, her husband had left, and, you know, for a younger woman, but I mean, she told me everything.
That's great. That's
and
so great.
It was just amazing. Yeah. I just think it's just, it's just amazing.
Yeah.
You know,
can you
know,
feel,
and
does it feel at all? Does it feel at all like falling in love at first sight? Because I think that's something we can do, and maybe it's not that. Who knows? But when you're opening up like that, you are kind of in a way falling in love with somebody.
Do you think so?
You know, in a little bit, because you're seeing into their soul, into their depths.
Mm-hmm.
And whenever you see, yeah.
You know what? I can buy that because let's say I'm just going to say a friend. So I had kind of shared a little bit about the conversation with a friend, and they stopped by to visit, and they, on their way, had seen the neighbor that I had was just telling you about, and that neighbor, you know, has been really struggling with divorce and has had, you know, a lot of head trauma and, you know, maybe declared to have PTSD, they think, and all these things, just lots of issues. And and so they hadn't been keeping up their yard, so they were concerned about the neighborhood and, you know, everybody and all these things. Well, they had actually cleaned it up, you know, and so my friend came by and had seen the before and after of it, but kind of made a little joke. And so as far as this falling in love with, yes, I did, because I was a little defensive of them. You know, even though they were being lighthearted about it, I was like, you know what? They did it. Isn't that amazing? And I felt like this was like a kid or something of mine that I'd had because of this hour and a half that I spent with them. You know, I was like, you know what? This is awesome. Like, you know, I'm joking. And, you know, I joke about everything.
That's great.
But I felt a little protective of them. So yeah, I guess I do get that now.
Have you tried that? Have you tried that? It's hard. You can't just try it, but people have thrown people together and say, okay, look into each other's eyes as much as you can across the table. And then go through these lists of questions, and they get intimate right away. And so you're starting to tell, and then after 5 or 10 minutes, this will be private now, rate how much you love this person, and amazingly high scores. So that's how you fall in love. You are intimate, close proximity, and you're looking in eyes, and you're saying important things to each other.
My boyfriend and I did that, but we weren't strangers. But we did that very day, you know, and I was actually quite amazed by how even just look, you know, on another occasion beside that one, just looking in each other's eyes, I was amazed by how he could do that so comfortably, because a lot of people can't, you know, and I think he might have beat me in that one, you know, not beat me, but like, you know, it was like,
he's better.
Wow, he is really good. Sure. Yeah, he's sure of himself, you know what I mean? And there was nothing uncomfortable about it, and he was okay with me seeing him. And seeing me, you know, really comfortable with that. And I thought that was a first-time experience for me.
It's funny. I like how looking at science would say, they would look for the reasons why we were so able to fall in love. And they would trace it to how humans need friends and community in order to survive better. And so we develop these social skills which allow us to band together, and you know, they do it all in a mechanistic kind of a way of, we are falling in love because our genes want to reproduce, and they turn it into a mechanistic kind of a statement. But on the other hand, you can take it as proof of God in a way, you know, that we we're able to see the divine in the other if we take a moment to look deeply whenever you see the divine in another person, you fall in love, and so you can take the very same facts and then interpret them as a mechanistic or a spiritualistic kind of a picture of the world. I like that.
I do too.
There, you reminded me of this old Clint Eastwood movie. He was this gruff war hero who lived, maybe it was Detroit, maybe it was somewhere, but it was inner city, and in his lifetime his neighbors all left and the other neighbors moved in, and in his case maybe it was Latino and Asian moved in, maybe Korean. And he hated everybody in his neighborhood.
I always wanted to see that, but it got by me.
I think it was called Gran Torino because he had a car.
And
when he was a kid, he worked at the Ford plant in Detroit. So maybe it was outskirts of Detroit. And anyway, he ends up saving the life of some kid and starting to fall in love with some people in the neighborhood. But I love the picture of the person in the tight neighborhood where they have to meet people that they don't like. And I think that's more and more what we try to avoid. Like I say, we try to get away from that. We don't want to have to meet people.
That's interesting. Yeah, I mean, I know that's normal, but, you know, But I just recently learned people don't open their windows. You know, they live with their windows sealed shut.
Right, right.
And they're okay with that. And I didn't know that until a month ago.
Except they get radon poisoning. They get some kind of noble gas build up in their house. And they, you know, I've always loved an airy house because people who are so secluded, they end up dying of some radon poisoning or something.
Mm-hmm.
But I lived in a bad, so-called bad neighborhood when I was in my early 20s. Just because it was that I could buy a $3,000 house. It was great. I had a $3,000 house. I paid it off. And my taxes were $125 a year. And that was my property tax. That's all I had to make to pay my bills, really. And I turned off my turned off my heat because I didn't need to be warm. And it was really great. So I lived in this neighborhood where every day this funny man would walk by very slowly, going to the store at the corner, and 20 paces behind him, this funny woman would walk behind him. Every day, these two went to the store together, but they never were together. They're 20 paces apart.
Dude, and I had some people like that in the old neighborhood, and they had a grown-up daughter, and she lived with them. And they walked that far apart. It was all the time. And we had the same conversation every time, but I'd have it three times.
That's right.
That's amazing.
Yeah, and the store they're going to, of course, the store, if you think about how bad the store was, it was just horrible stuff. You know, the always smelled of rotten milk in there and old chicken. And anyway, I lived in that neighborhood for 10 years, and it was, I met all kinds of wonderful, strange people. As long as you're out
to them?
If you're out among them, then you fit. Everything's fine. But
That's so funny.
I had to change one thing about myself. I had a regular job when I moved in there, and because of that, I was being robbed because I was predictable. So because of that neighborhood, I end up having a great life where I don't have any regular hours. I'm a piano tuner. And so I'm home in the middle of the day and I'm gone at night and all kinds of things. And so I was able to stay in the neighborhood and not be robbed because I changed my life around.
But yeah, my sister's in a neighborhood where she's sort of become a bit of a prisoner in it because of that. And she's retired, but you know, there's definitely that, you know, she has to pay attention to how, you know, when she goes and where and what time and all these things. And so I can't wait for the day when she leaves that place.
Yeah. You pay one way or another. You pay with high property taxes her situation. Yeah.
Yeah.
I always pay these people on the street when I pull up, like I say, in the cardboard, I don't know what you call them, cardboard people. I call them cardboard people because they always have the sign that says, why lie, need liquor, you know, whatever. And, and so when I pull up, I always pay them something so I can talk to them because the only way you can talk to them is if you pay them something. And then they're totally opening up to you and telling you everything about their life. It's really so nice.
Do they really? Do you have a question you ask?
No. I just say, man, you got the hardest job in town. And then it just opens. Oh, yeah, you better believe it. Because it's true. I would never do that job. I would kill myself before I did that. That's so hard. So.
Yeah, that's interesting. I'm torn on that. There's been occasion that I will give money. I don't generally ask any questions. I yelled at by one guy.
Really?
Years ago.
After you gave money or before?
It kind of pissed me off. Well, because I wouldn't give money.
Yeah, that's it.
I saw him all the time and I walked by him, and then on the way out of Barnes & Noble, I think, something like that. He said, he always says, could you possibly help the homeless? And I said, not tonight. And he said, not tonight, not any night. Several times, you know, and I was like, are you kidding me?
That's right.
I don't know.
It's rough. I mean, they have every right to be angry. The longer they're standing there and the more rich cars they see going by and the more it must just drive them nuts. I was going to ask you the feeling you had, which I think is so beautiful, that maybe a lot of people have, that I will get along with all women, or all old people are nice, or these kind of feelings.
Oh, yeah.
Those, are those a biological necessity for us? Are those a picture of a divine pre-birth existence, that when you come to Earth, everything is wonderful, and then you realize after you're here that people have been corrupted and they start to lose their way, and so then you realize people become mean and greedy, and you know what I mean? I think it's pretty weird that people ever feel that way that you felt, and I felt that way, and I feel that way. And so there's,
you thought it was weird that I thought those, all those things, that those things would be?
Well, if you look at the world, you'll say, why would anyone think that, right? Because...
yeah, I was kind of naive, I guess.
But most people feel that way when they come in the place. You know, they just arrive. Everything's wonderful. And we have to teach them, no, it's not that way. So they come thinking it's wonderful.
Oh, yeah.
And then we teach them, no, you got to learn this dog-eat-dog.
Absolutely. And, you know, it was so disappointing. And I'm actually surprised I made it to my 20s and still thought some of those things.
Yeah.
You know, when I was a kid and be out with my folks, no matter where we were, you know, if we were in Black community, everybody spoke. Everybody spoke.
Right.
So then to go to places where people didn't, I mean, I'd been assumed everybody did, and not just the people that, you know, where my folks would take us, you know, I just assumed everybody would. But then to meet some, you know, people of all races after that who wouldn't. And I was just like, you're kidding. Or, you know, and then especially the whole female thing, man, I wasn't ready for that at all.
No,
I mean,
no.
When I started teaching I came in there looking to the older women, and there were some older Black ladies in there, and you know, I'm thinking they're going to take me under their wing, they're going to be glad that and proud of me for having gone to college, and you know, all these things and blah blah. And no, I was a threat.
Yeah.
I'd never had that before, and that was so disappointing. That was so sad to me.
Yeah.
You know, that I don't know. I think we beat that out of our kids too, like you're saying. I mean, the kids, they come in not knowing anything about race or anything. I was thinking about this the other day. They had a beautiful Martin Luther King Jr. celebration at my kid's school a couple of years back. I thought it was gorgeous. It was a lovely thing they did. But I couldn't stop wondering, if we hadn't told them about it, could we get by, you know, if we could all just keep our mouths shut for a generation, you know, for one round.
Wow,
could
nice.
We not annihilate some of this?
Yeah.
And when I said this to one of my Black friends, he said, you better be careful who you say that around, because people will think you're like Republican, because that's what you know, some of those guys want.
Yeah.
And he said, but you're not talking about it like that. You're just talking about it from a spiritual, like, you know, just a fundamental, why can't we just treat each other the same?
That's what they think about with the Jews and the Arabs. And can they live one generation where people aren't killing each other?
Right.
You know,
just one. Just let it. Can we just sit on it? Can we just, you know, just stifle ourselves one freaking time around? Because I tell you what, Sophia is like, she thought it was just nuts. She's like, what do they mean, Mama? People couldn't drink from the same water fountain. These guys don't get that. But we keep telling them about it and telling them about it and making them write assignments, do assignments on it. And it really kind of pisses me off, ultimately. Because I don't see much point in it. And then I'll talk to someone else. I mean, and I'm down the middle on this, don't get me wrong. There's a part of me that's just speaking as an, you know, this is an ideal that I have that I think is what should be. But then there's the, you know, that's the spiritual part, you know, that's the divine in me. And then there's the part that's going through this experience as a Black woman here. And I know that, you know, it does help to tell, you know, to educate people about it, because a lot of people don't think it's even happening, you know, or a lot of people don't understand it, you know. And
well, you started this whole thing. You started the conversation with this comments on that story of Obama's daughter.
You know, when I scrolled down that list, Jack, I actually, and then I replied, and then I shared it, and then I went back to it, and I thought, oh my God, is this even real? I mean, is it real? Because the comments were so cruel.
Yeah.
I thought, maybe this isn't real. Like, maybe this is like one, maybe it's a joke and he doesn't know it yet. And, you know, he'll write out, you know, be sending a thing out later and saying, yeah. Oh, this was not, no, but it was real. And I, it still was hard, even for me who knows that happens, it was still hard to swallow.
You don't understand.
It was still hard. And what's so ridiculous is there's no, you know, of course there's no sense in being racist, but what is really ridiculous is if these people are college educated, they would have enough, they should know well enough that her family probably makes way too damn much money for, to even qualify for scholarships that are in place because of affirmative action. Yeah. So therefore, all their comments were ridiculously
talking, you're talking
inane.
About the typical comment of, since she was black, she got in. All she had to say is
absolutely.
She was,
you know, that. And they were assuming, A, she couldn't get in because her grades were good enough, and B, they were assuming her parents, that she was going to qualify for scholarships
based
on affirmative action.
Of course, that's the essence of trolling. I mean, if you're smart, a troll will say exactly the stupidest possible thing that will that will make you mad. And so, excellent work. Those trolls did excellent work there. They
you're right about that.
Made me so mad. I've got this, my best friend Kofi, I don't know if you listen to any of our conversations in here on the podcast, but he came from Ghana, Africa. He came to America through Britain. He's working as a social worker up east. He does not get, I mean, he's older than we are. He gets hit from both sides because he has not had the American Negro experience. He's an African man. So he comes here and he's my friend. He's a friend of mine. And so the American blacks will say, why are you friends with white people? You know? And so he's going, why not? And then the white people go, man, you're a nigger. You know, all this stuff is.
Yeah.
And
oh,
so
yeah,
he's hit
that.
From, he's
yeah,
got,
you,
he gets
you
it from
get
both,
it
sides.
Both sides. Oh, and, yeah. And I got it from both sides in college. It was ridiculous. You do. You're not black enough. You're not white enough.
Yeah.
You know, it's just so stupid.
It's really crazy. And so there's no,
yeah.
He went through that list. I felt so sorry. I put that link up there because there might be white people who don't believe that white people are still racist today. And I want to make sure that I do my part.
Yep.
And but then he sees it. My poor friend Kofi, who is killed by this kind of thing, he doesn't understand it.
Mm-hmm,
how
mm-hmm.
could people do that? How could they say that? And I'm so sorry I put it up because he saw it. I'm so sorry.
Oh. Well, I shared it because I thought, you know, for the same reason you did.
Yeah.
You know, there.
Yeah.
Wow. I mean, wow. I'm just like amazed. I mean, if we were given out grades for how mean that shit was and how utterly cruel it was, those guys were just ace it. They got flying colors. They passed that test, man. I couldn't believe it.
You know, it's almost understandable in the internet because it's kind of anonymous, even though those people had their usernames. But
yes. You
see it on the road. I'm in Texas. In Austin, of all places, you see this racist stuff. Within a month of Obama getting into office, there was this horrible grouping of bumper stickers that I will not share with you. They're just, and they're on a car in public.
Oh, I know it. They want you to know. You know, what's amazing is all this time, you know, before he got in, I guess people were just sort of, what were they just play acting? What were they doing, you know, before the Tea Party? Were they just, you know, all the political correctness? And were they just literally smiling in my face, just, you know, grinning, you know, like behind their smile, just hating me? And, you know, and now it's just like, I've been likening it to someone who comes out of the closet who's gay. You know, these guys are out of the closet. They're ecstatic.
Yep.
They get to be as racist as they want to now because it's okay. It's like in fashion or something. And
that's right.
They've put in their time being good, and now they are getting to, I mean, they are having a ball out there.
Which
but
is
I,
the
and
one.
I
was going to say, that's the only good thing about Trump is that the cover is off.
Yes, you're exactly right, man.
I mean, that's the only good thing I can see with it is that you can see clearly who. That's what they're saying.
Yeah.
Well, is there an app that shows which of your friends is racist? Yeah, it's called Facebook. It's a great. Facebook is the best way to tell who's racist and who isn't.
That's exactly right.
you can tell we're just getting into something, and I'm saving it for next week. Sorry to cut that off, but that's long enough for a podcast. If you have any comments or suggestions, please drop me a line at reasoningwithanoptimist.net and come back next week. This is Jack Brissett-Mills. Bye-bye.